Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. Habs Unfiltered is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio. This podcast brings you honest and in-depth hockey discussion and entertainment. Our hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources for Habs and hockey news. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome to Habs Unfiltered, episode 142. I'm your host, Blaine Putney. I'm joined now by my co-host, Matt Smith.
Good morning.
Treg, the Hot Rod Wilson.
Good morning.
those of you who are joining us via audio-only apps, Treg has decided to sport his Rowdy Roddy Piper t-shirt.
That's right. Hot Rod. Greatest wrestler of all time.
He's good, but you know.
And this, but just instead of wearing a kilt, he's just foregone wearing pants.
That's true.
Correct. Yeah. But in the kilt traditional style. So nothing underneath my no pants.
His shirt tail is hanging out. Rowdy Roddy Piper's fine and all, but he's no Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
That's an insult, Blaine.
Ooh. All right. So just to get us started, the Habs Unfiltered account put out a poll, and this is super serious, scientifically proven. So please pay attention, as this is primordial to everyone's lives. Habs Unfiltered asked, if there was a scrum in the Habs Unfiltered studios and Matt was manhandling Treg, how would you want Blaine to deal with the situation? The responses were film it and take bets, hit Treg with a chair, and dress like a 90s WWF superstar. Finally, all of the above. So filming it and taking bets got second place with 20%. Hit Treg with a chair was 9%. Dressed like a star, 13, and all of the above won with 59% of the vote.
I really thought getting hit with a chair would be a bigger percentage.
So did I.
I think they went with the all of the above because people wanted a couple of things at once, but they all wanted to hit you with a chair.
That's fine. I can take a good chair shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know,
it's what a good heel does. It's what a good heel does.
So. And you've been hit by chairs at work quite often.
Home, work, wherever.
Yeah. Sometimes the ship throws them at you and it takes a roll. Other times it's your coworkers just throwing chairs at you.
It's true. The chair when the ship takes a roll is amazing because you don't see that one coming.
There's no wheels on them either.
Yeah, because you're just sitting there like, hey, what's going on, guys? And all of a sudden a chair's flying at you.
Or a couch.
And you're at like a 60-degree angle or something.
Yeah. My favorite's when you're on the couch and then it slides across the room and you hit the wall. That's my favorite. So, all right. So, Matt, clearly Treg has picked Rowdy Roddy Piper as his WWF superstar of the 90s. Who would yours be?
It's hard to say. It really is. Like I know who my favorite is. I don't know if I would take on his persona, but I was in a, like I've always been an Undertaker fan, to be honest, right? But I can't really say that I can take on his whole persona. I am very pale. That's about it.
You're much too pretty, so maybe you could be Mr. Perfect.
Oh, I don't know about
Rick
that.
Rude, the ravishing one.
Yes, ravishing Matt.
God, I'll take it.
Although, are you the American Badass Undertaker? Or are you the Dead Man Walking Undertaker?
That's the one that I like the most.
The Dead Man Walking or the
the
okay.
original.
Yeah,
He
the
has to go with the
original.
original, because it's the 90s and he kind of held that persona through the 90s.
True. True.
And I'm debating on whether I go Ultimate Warrior because he's insane, or Hacksaw Jim Duggan because he's kind of just basic.
I can see you guys being
You got hit in the head one too
the
many times with that piece of lumber.
I can see the
It is
two of you
true, I guess.
together being the bushwhackers or something and doing
Oh,
that.
yeah. And my ex-wife is Yokozuna.
My wife would be
My.
Scary Sherry.
Oh, it's a good thing none of them listen to this.
Oh, if my wife listened to this, I'd be divorced by now. Actually, if my wife actually listened to me, I'd be divorced by now. I'm pretty sure she just puts earplugs in and walks away.
Don't blame her.
I mean, seriously, just try living with me.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
All right,
So.
enough goofing off. I think we can get started here for real. So in today's episode, we'll cover off a few items: schedule fatigue, some development talk, a rematch of tonight. The Canadians are playing the Leafs again tonight, and what the lines will look like for the playoffs, or what we think they should look like for the playoffs, because the Canadians are going to make it. So let's kick it off with the schedule fatigue.
Excuses. It's all excuses.
Yes, all excuses. Hockey players do this kind of schedule all the time.
Just excuses. You shouldn't be at that level if you can't play that many games.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. This whole COVID season, making one division where you play teams 9 to 10 times, sounded fun. I mean, this season has been fun in its own way. It's a little less traditional. You got more games against rivals. Who can't enjoy that part of it? But at the same time, you're looking at the schedule and you're saying, holy crap, these guys are playing 3, 4, 5 games in a week, every week. Before the COVID shutdown for the Canadians, they had a couple of weeks where they had 2 games, a couple of 3 games, and then the rest were 3 to 4. Now it's all 4 and 6, 4 and 6, 4 and 6, 4 and 6 for 6 straight weeks. Is it any wonder that the injuries have started to pile up and that they show up to games and they look completely gassed from the start?
No, it's I've been silently saying this. I don't like throwing that stuff out on Twitter because all you get is every other fan base
Yeah.
saying excuses. There's no excuse for that. Vancouver's going to find you, and this is why Montreal's pretty much in the playoffs. It's same thing's going to happen in Vancouver. It already has. And I hate throwing things at the fans all the time, but I guess we're just products of social media because we see all the hate and all the where we spend a lot of time on social media. We see a lot of the, but there's just too much high and low. So the Canadians had their 3-game win streak there, which is great. Like I don't expect them to go any more than win a game, lose a game, win a game in this type of schedule. I really don't. If they win 2 or more games, bonus.
Especially with the injury, especially with the injuries.
Yeah. And with the schedule, and like you said, it's pretty much a back-to-back night game every week and 4 games in 6 nights. That would be hard on anyone, right? I mean, especially playing at that pace, at that physicality, and especially playing a team that didn't play the night before or hadn't played in 2 days. It had time to rest, had time to practice, had time to work on the little things that you're doing wrong. Montreal just doesn't get that chance. They won't get that chance at the end of the season. Come playoffs, different story. It's not an excuse anymore. You can say it's an excuse all you want. Hell, you can go back and say Montreal only made the playoffs because of COVID-19 again this year, or any other team that made the playoffs only made it because of COVID-19. Don't expect this team to go into the playoffs on a winning streak at all.
No, and it's pretty sad when you look at the playoff schedule, which the NHL playoffs have always been touted as the hardest playoffs in the major sports and the toughest schedule, because you're playing almost one game every other night. So you play a game, day off. And they tout that as the toughest schedule. So it's pretty freaking sad when you look at the playoff schedule and say, wow, that's way easier than what they've been doing lately.
Yeah.
That says something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, back in the day, you used to play your back-to-back nights on your home thing. You'd have a night off, back-to-back nights, night off game. But they don't even do that now. Now it's you play a game, you get at least one night off, play another game. It all's TV schedule-wise now, so it all depends on when the TV ratings come in. But it is pretty sad that you can go into a playoff knowing that your schedule is going to be easier than what it was to end your regular season.
Well, and you're looking at the schedule and knowing that you're going to have that many games and that little amount of time, that's one thing. But then you got to look at the schedule of your opponents as well. Is it any wonder that the Canadians look dead tired compared to their opposition when they show up on their third game in four nights and the other team has had a night or two off before the game starts? That's been a pretty steady occurrence for the Canadians, where they play, you know, the first of a back-to-back or second of back-to-back against a team that's rested. They've had a couple of nights off. I think the Canadians have had two, maybe three games in the last 6 weeks where they were the ones that were rested before playing someone else, as opposed to being the team that teams want to go against because they've played the night before. You don't see that as much with the other teams. And this has a lot to do with the COVID shutdown the Canadians suffered and the change in the schedule. So this isn't a pre-planned thing. It's not a woe is me thing. It's just, these are the facts.
I think we all saw this comment. I just don't think that we expected maybe the injuries to hit as hard as what they did. I think we all thought that you know, something would come eventually. But when you lose Weber, you lose Gallagher to an on ice injury. That was something. It happened, right? He broke his hand. Yeah. But you know, you lose Gallagher. Now you lose Deneau, and he's missing tonight's game. Tatar's missed some time. Byron's missed some time. Drouin's taking some time away from the team. We don't even know if he's going to be back come the playoffs. You know, you start losing players of this caliber, and like, I know none of these guys, you know, other people that are listening, other fan bases, if you're listening, you're thinking to yourself, well, that's not Austin Matthews or that's not Connor McDavid. Well, you know, they're still the top tier players on the Canadiens. You lose that depth. You lose these guys. You're relying on more of the Frolics and those kind of players to jump into the lineup. And Frolics played seven games all year. Yeah. So it's not a guy that's going to come in and, you know, give you the production that that a Thomas Tatar is going to give you.
No, he's looked good. Frolic has looked good.
He has. Like,
he's a bottom line guy.
That's right.
He's not a Tatar replacement.
That's right. And right now, and that's not even bringing up the fact that they've been without Carey Price since, say, the middle of April.
Yeah.
I will say this, that the depth this year is a hell of a lot better than it was last year. Because if we had the depth we had last year, we wouldn't be in a playoff spot right now. So that's a testament to that. And Carey Price, I think, even though he's had a down year, as people would say, and a lot of people were saying, put Allen in, get rid of Price. Well, you're showing right now why Allen can't be a number one starter. And I'm not dissing on Allen. Don't, because he's been playing a lot of freaking hockey in a short amount of time. I'm not dissing on him.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, it's the importance of having a Price and an Allen, because you can go to those two guys and feel comfortable who you're putting us. And it's nothing against Primo. Primo had that terrible game against Toronto where he didn't get any help, but And it's all, I mean, if we had Price, then you would have had Price in against Ottawa, Allen against Toronto, and you probably would have, might have won one or the other. Well, yeah, with the way the teams played, maybe not. But you had a fully healthy team, and this will probably segue into our next topic. But if you have a fully healthy team going into the playoffs, I have no issue with this team going up against anyone going into the playoffs. A fully
healthy team. And we saw how it was at the start of the year when the team was fully healthy.
Yeah.
They were excellent. They were rested, they were healthy. Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is who's out as of today, as we record. It's May 8th. It's the morning of May 8th. The Canadians are playing the Leafs tonight. This is who's out right now. Price, Weber, Danault, Byron, and Gallagher. So you have two-thirds of your top line, your starting goalie, and one of your top three defensemen.
And Drouin.
And Drouin. Who's a top six winger, and Byron, who's a depth winger, but still a leadership member of this team. So you have six players out, six, all out with injury. Now, as of right now, the belief is that all of them will be ready for the playoffs.
Going to be ready tonight.
Maybe. Okay. It's no guarantee, but maybe. But either way,
he's
probably not going to get the start even if he dresses.
Yeah.
So these are the guys that are out right now who are all expected to be back for the playoffs. Six guys, and all of them are fairly significant roles in the Canadiens organization. And even with them out, the Canadiens have been able to hold firm on that fourth position, and there's a possibility that maybe they can get into that third spot. Everything depends on Winnipeg. If the Canadiens can actually put out a couple of wins here, they got Toronto, they got Edmonton a couple of times. So it's not impossible, but it's, don't get me wrong, it's not likely. So that's what the Canadiens are facing right now. That's where this depth comes in. You guys have been going on about the depth, and yeah, it's helped. Caulfield is called up. He's producing. He's actually one of the team leaders in expected goals for. He's got two game winners already off his stick. So he's making an impact. Evans has been one of the emergency call-ups as well, and he's looked excellent. You know, guys like Perry are stepping up, and I like Perry. He's, he's a good player and all, but he's 36 years old. And if you're relying on him and you're playing against teams like Toronto who are fully healthy, it's not going to look good. Like that last game, the four goals in the first period, that killed the game right there. But what I was looking for the rest of the game, I wanted to see what kind of a response the Canadians had. Like they were exhausted. They were flat-footed. They were outmatched. The goaltending wasn't very good. Then when the second period started, they came out. They ended up winning the rest of the game basically 2-1. If you're looking for moral victories here, that's a moral victory. They still got their asses handed to them, but they came out and they battled back. They showed some resilience. They show that they can compete against this team. So that's something they can take into tonight's game.
That also explains the lack of goal scoring Montreal has too, is how tired they are. They just can't rush the play like they on a nightly basis. Like they have, like, I don't know when's the last time they scored three or more goals, but Winnipeg, Winnipeg 5-3. Yeah. So, and going back to that, Winnipeg is playing two against the Canucks, the Senators, and the Maple Leafs. So Montreal pretty much got to win every game to take third spot, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's looking like Toronto, Montreal first round.
Yeah. And that's fine, but we'll get into that later. So the fatigue is the big thing for the Canadians right now. I don't care. Call it an excuse. I really don't care. But it's an actual fact. Fatigue is a real thing, people. It's a real thing that people get. They get tired. They get bored out. They get whatever. Top athletes, happens to top athletes, happens to everyone. You take even a baseball player who play every night almost. Even they have to take a night off here or there to rest.
And that's baseball.
And that's baseball, right? So if you're going to say fatigue, you're using it just as an excuse, then you don't understand sports. That's all I'm saying to you.
It is definitely a factor in the way the Canadians have been playing. Now, come playoff time, the schedule is going to get a little easier for them because they're only playing one game every other night. So it's a lot better. You get a night off in between.
And you're playing the same as the team you're playing.
That's right. So there's no advantage or disadvantage. And because of the way everything happened with Vancouver and Montreal, the schedule has been extended. So the playoffs for the North are going to start a week later, which gives the Canadians a week off before the playoffs start. So they're going to be able to get rested up a little bit, take care of those dings and bangs and bruises and whatnot. And they'll be able to step into the playoffs as healthy as you can possibly expect them to be.
And Ducharme will have more than one night to practice this together.
He might have to
work on stuff.
He might have two.
He might have two, maybe even three.
Exactly. So it's the schedule. Yeah. It's a factor. It's not an excuse. It's just a factor in some of the issues. There are lots of other issues.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for why the team keeps making mental errors, why the team seems flat-footed, a lot of it has to do with what they've faced in the schedule.
Physical fatigue leads to mental fatigue.
You're behind the play. You're going to be taking bad penalties. You're going to be making poor decisions. You're going to be cheating on the play so you can try and get ahead. It just snowballs. And this is all, these are all issues that we've been watching the Canadians put in, the last 6 weeks. So, Matt, do you have anything to add to it? Or
on this topic, I wouldn't. You guys have made the point. It's Trey said, it's not an excuse. It's just a factor. And we've seen it throughout the year. We saw a top tier team at the start of the year, and COVID hits. Well, COVID had already hit, but COVID hit the team, and then it just kind of seemed like they got their foot off the gas pedal. And there's been multiple storylines throughout the season that I believe have contributed to the way that the Canadians are right now and the way they are in the standings and the injuries that they have, and maybe some people talking about developmental issues within the team and everything like that. You lose a coach mid-season when everything is looking like you're going to be one of the top teams in the division. As a fan, you want to always stick by your team. As someone that does this kind of stuff, you kind of have to go against the fans sometimes, stick your neck out there. But I'm really hoping that come playoffs that we see a more healthy squad, and that Ducharme can actually put some lines together that are going to stay together for more than just a game.
We're going to get into what we think the playoff lines are going to look like here in a little bit. But the next topic we're going to get into is development. So essentially, Kotkaniemi has become a lightning rod for fans online, because with Drouin out, they need a new target. So the target is Kotkaniemi. And it's not an all negative. Some of it is in defense of him, but it's negative towards management. There's a giant argument right now about his development and about how good he really is. So this 20-year-old kid who already has over 160 NHL games played is now either hot trash, a bust, or is not being developed properly by the team, and everybody needs to be fired and trade the whole team and rebuild. So Matt, we'll start with you first. What is your take on Kotkaniemi right now?
I see somebody that's trying to force the play a little too much, especially when it comes to the power play. We know he's got a good shot. We know he can make a good first pass. It just seems that he is just trying to force the play a hell of a lot too much. And when you're somebody that's a young player, success is kind of attributed to you putting the puck in the net or you helping somebody put the puck in the net. And this is a guy that hasn't scored in 21 games. He's not seeing the ice very well. He's, you know, hit or miss when it comes to the way he plays throughout the game, if he's going to play a physical style or not. His face-off numbers are very hit or miss. He's anywhere between, a 20% or, in the high 60s for the game. So his consistency is not there whatsoever. And even putting up assists, he just hasn't been doing it. The points haven't been coming. And it's not necessarily from the lack of ice time. He's still seeing the ice more than some other players, and they've been producing at a higher level. Obviously, taking him off of the center position and throwing him on the wing, having a carousel of wingers, that's not going to help. It's not going to help anybody try to break out of a slump. Why I think that the fan base has kind of turned on him, or that the media has kind of turned on him, is they're looking at players that were taken around the same time as him or before him as a comparison. Well, let's just say it this way. He was picked third. Montreal wasn't going to get Dahlin. They weren't going to get Svechnikov. So let's take those out, okay? The one that continues to come up is Brady Tkachuk. And we saw Brady Tkachuk at the draft. Seemed like a pretty nice kid. He's a completely different player than Kotkaniemi. The Canadians went out and they saw, this guy is the guy that we need. He's the center that we want. We're going to go out and we're going to pick him. And obviously you've got that historic video moment with the what lady and everything like that, which is something we're always going to remember because we met her. Could Brady Tkachuk be on this team and be helping them? Absolutely. Would it put another hole in the lineup? Absolutely. You got to remember, like, Kotkaniemi's still a young guy. He's still 20 years old. And as Treg always points out, you've got to dominate the league that you played in prior before you can jump into the NHL and be dominant. He never did that. He wasn't a dominant player when he played in asshat, as Treg calls it.
Ass porn,
whatever. He was never a dominant player there. He was drafted more or less as a winger, because that's where he played wing, drafted as a center. But, he had his 13 games in Laval and was a point-a-game player, only scored once. But, you know, and then this year he's been mediocre, especially he started the year pretty well, just like the rest of the team. But I just think that I don't think it's a developmental issue. I just think that you don't put the right players with him and he pops a goal or two and maybe his confidence is going to boost up. Some people are saying it's because Mete's gone now and they were such good friends. And
before Mete left.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see that being a thing. I'm going to give the guy some time. Hopefully we see down the stretch and starting the playoffs, we see the more Kotkaniemi playoff edition and not this version here, because it's if he continues to play the way that he is right now, they've got to look at they might have to start looking at possible center options this offseason.
Well, here's the thing with Kotkaniemi. He is one of the team leaders in zone exits and zone entries.
Yep.
One of the better players in that. He is also a strong defensive player. He's very physical up the middle. He has great vision. His shot is good, but it needs to get off quicker. And that's been the main issue with his shooting, is sticks can get in the lane. They got time to adjust before he shoots. He's just not fast enough in his shot release. Yeah. So that's stuff he can work on in the off season. Defensive positioning, he can keep working on that. A little bit more strength. He's still only 20 years old. So this constant comparison to Tkachuk is just annoying. Tkachuk, when he was drafted, and I wrote about him with another website at length in a scouting report, the kid was NHL ready the year before he got drafted. because he missed the draft by a couple days.
Yeah.
He had fully physically matured by that point. He was ready to just plug and play into a lineup. Now, don't get me wrong. He's a very good hockey player, and he's going to be a guy that's going to score you 20 goals, 50 points every year for the rest of his career. He has leadership, the whole thing. So, you know, they're going on and on about him. That's great. But you can't compare a guy who's a year older in another position just because he was picked after.
But that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. And the fact that someone like Philip Zadina is starting to put up points now with Detroit, you're even getting that. Like, the Canadians should have picked him, or they should have went and looked at Quinn Hughes, even though he can't play defense.
It's constantly the same thing. It's whoever's scoring points at that exact moment in time is your argument. You drop the guy who's in a slump and go with a new guy to compare to your guy. It's never, ever, ever just one person. They constantly go with the hot hand to say, well, look, these guys are always great. No, you're skipping around. You're moving the goalposts. And if you're going to compare one player to another from that draft, if you're going to compare Kotkaniemi to someone, it should be Barrett Hayton, who's picked fifth. Yep. He's the other center. The top two centers of that draft are the two you should compare to. And where's Barrett Hayton right now?
He's still playing for Arizona, isn't he? He just hasn't been putting up the points.
Exactly, because he's 20 years old.
Actually, no, he's playing in the AHL right now.
He's
playing in the AHL. 7 points in the AHL in 22 games and 3 points in 14 this season with Arizona.
Is he a bust? No, he's 20 years old and he's still learning. So you pointed out the inconsistencies in the faceoff circle for Kotkaniemi, which is completely true, but it's still a better – there's the peaks and valleys are – the valleys aren't quite as deep and the peaks are much higher this year than they were last year. So there is progression. Progression's not a linear line straight up. There's going to be ups and downs. Right now, Kotkaniemi, he looks like he's going to be a guy who can be a 60-point center in the NHL.
Yep.
That's not a 3 overall. You can argue all you want about that not being good enough at 3 overall. But for a team that has not had actual centers for 25 freaking years, that's good. At least it's a pick that should turn out.
Yep.
Now, you want to talk about his development, the constant shifting of wingers, moving him up the lineup, down the lineup, new winger, he hasn't had a winger on his wing play over 100 minutes.
No.
And the one, except for, I think, Lehkonen. Is he putting in goals? Not really. He scored one the other night, but Lehkonen is not a finisher. Lehkonen is a puck retrieval guy. Kotkaniemi is a playmaker, so you need someone who can shoot, someone like a Caulfield perhaps, or Toffoli. When he had Toffoli, Toffoli's play, he was dipped down a little bit, and he played with Kotkaniemi. Toffoli started scoring goals again. Granted, it was against Vancouver, but still, it moved up. People want to compare centers. How about you compare how Suzuki has been handled versus how Kotkaniemi has been handled? Suzuki, I grant you that he has played better overall, so he deserves more ice time. But when Suzuki was slumping, they didn't shift him all the way down. They didn't put him on a third or fourth line role. They didn't take away his wingers. And they kept him playing his role. They kept him with steady wings. They let him work through it. Whereas Kotkaniemi has a bad period. Well, his whole line changes, or his role changes, or he's taken off the power player. I can't understand the difference in approach between the two. I know the team is trying to win now. They're trying to make the playoffs now. But if you're going to be that patient with your 21-year-old center, why aren't you being patient with your 20-year-old center?
I think injuries have really played a factor into this, because especially with them going out and getting Staal and then wanting to play Evans. Deneau's gone now, but even before that, with him being in the lineup, and then you've got Suzuki, where you've got to play a certain amount of center positions, but then you start losing out on these wingers. And instead of playing, I can see why they tried to put Kotkaniemi up in more of a top six role, because he is a big guy on the boards and everything like that, and he does have a decent shot when he has the space to use it. The fact that you lost Drouin, the fact that you lost Byron, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, doesn't help the situation. With the Suzuki comparison, you're right. They didn't really take his wingers away or anything like that, and he's found a way to get out of his slump, and he's been one of the best players of the Canadiens. Probably been their best forward over the last couple weeks, at least. For the least, probably the last month, he's been their best forward. Maybe that's what Kotkaniemi needs. Maybe he needs some, throw Caulfield on one side and throw, Army or Lehkonen or whatever on the other side, and for him to get some favorable matchups and not be playing against maybe a top six opponent. Start popping a couple in the net, or at least getting some scoring chances. And maybe that confidence will come back.
Well, tonight's game, we're going to see an increase in use for Kotkaniemi because Deno is out. So your top matchup center, it's a de facto top line center, is out. So Suzuki's line is going to be facing off probably against the Tavares line again, because that's been their bread and butter this season. Kotkaniemi is more than likely going to be facing off against Matthews. And I can guarantee Matthews is going to burn him at least once in this game. And people are going to get all up in arms that Kotkaniemi is a draft bust or a failure because Matthews scored a goal. I'm going to break the news to Habs fans. Please sit down. Brace yourselves. Matthews is the leading goal scorer in the NHL this year. He's going to score. Even if he's covered, he can still find a way to score. He is good. He is an excellent hockey player. So getting beaten by him once in a game shouldn't be the benchmark of saying that guy sucks. It's going to happen. And Evans is probably going to be pushed into a matchup role against Matthews after that, because Ducharme seems to have less of a leash with Kotkaniemi than he does with Suzuki. And I can't understand why.
We're probably going to see a lot more Staal and Evans, actually.
Yeah. Hopefully not that much Staal, because Staal's going to get burned wide.
And that won't even be a line juggling thing. That just seems like it just seems to me that when they lose confidence in Kotkaniemi throughout the game, we don't see that the line changes per se. And it's like, okay, well, line A isn't working, we're going to put line B in. We'll just swap out the centers. And then you've got Kotkaniemi's wingers playing with Staal or playing with Evans for a shift or two. And then it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, we got a power play. Okay, Kotkaniemi, go back out there.
I've seen Suzuki make boneheaded errors through the season as well. In the dog days of this season, Suzuki was having a hard time, but they let him work through it. And now he's on a point scoring streak where he has 11 points in his last six games.
He's playing well. I don't know what the number is. He's playing very well.
He is playing excellent hockey right now because they let him work through some of his issues, and they didn't try to change it from game to game. They kept him steady. They worked through it. So that approach works. I don't know why they use a different approach with the other center, other than the fact that this is a team that needs to make the playoffs to be seen as successful. And they're only got so much leeway, and they seem to be giving it all to one guy.
Yeah.
Treg?
You guys pretty much covered it. It talks of Brady Tkachuk in the comparison. You're comparing a winger with a center.
That's right.
And yep. You're pairing a winger on a team that has nothing to lose. Therefore, they're just throwing everybody out.
Yep.
Brady Tkachuk plays 18 minutes a game, where Jesperi Kotkaniemi plays 14 minutes a game. Close to 15. So that's a 3 minutes difference. And really, Tkachuk only has 15 more points than Kotkaniemi when you're really playing on the top line in Ottawa.
And he's lined up with their best offensive talent.
He's lined up with Norris and Formenton, I think, is who he or
and
or
sometimes what? Halifax native Drake Batherson.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like he, you know, and then you got Kotkaniemi on the third line who has insert winger of the flavor of the night winger. I mean, Lehkonen's been pretty steady with him. I'll say Lehkonen's normally on his line. And then you have whoever on the other. I'm a little bit mixed here. I think it's a little column. I think Kotkaniemi got to pick up his game.
Yes.
I think Kotkaniemi got to decide, is he going to be a defensive forward or is he going to be an offensive forward? Because I think he's kind of caught in the middle, wants to be an offensive forward, but he doesn't want to get away from his defensive side of the game. And he can play both. He just got to know how to play both and where he, you know, should pinch in and shouldn't
pinch
in.
One turn one on and one turn one off, yeah.
But he's 20 years old. Like, you have the old, when I used to bash Victor Mete, everyone says, oh, he's only 22. He got to develop. He's a defenseman. Kotkaniemi is only 20, and he's a center. It's harder to develop as a center than it is as a winger or anything else, because there's more to a game of a center than there is any other position. Except my defense is probably a good comparable. There's a lot you got to learn on the defensive side of things, too. So I think Kotkaniemi is a better defensive center than Suzuki is, but for some reason, you're absolutely right, Blaine. Suzuki's kind of like, all right, you're our guy, fuck up or not, we're gonna let you go. Kotkaniemi, yeah, you're screwed up, you're at the end of the bench.
And
maybe it's the 1 year NHL experience. I mean, Kotkaniemi has one more year NHL, maybe it's that. Like, I'm just throwing it, I'm reaching straws here.
But they've been like this with him for the entire 3 years.
I think Kotkaniemi should have started in Laval from the start. Personally, and Matt, you said it, you gotta be successful in the league below you before you should be playing in the league ahead of you. I think if he had a year in Laval with Ducharme, I think he would have been all right.
With Bouchard, you mean?
Bouchard, yeah. Did I say Ducharme? Yeah, I meant Bouchard. Yeah. He'd be all right. I don't know. I don't know what it is about Ducharme. Personally, if I were him at this point in the game where you only need 1 point, play your young guys. Sit the veterans down. Stahl, take a night off. You know what? Evans, Kotkaniemi, Suzuki. I mean, Stahl would have to play because you need the fourth center. But you guys, here you go. Kotkaniemi, go. Go with it, right? See what happens. What do you got to lose?
Especially when you got 3 games against teams that play more wide-open style hockey. Toronto and Edmonton. So, yeah, sure. Let them go.
Let them go. Vancouver and Calgary are not going to run the board to make the playoffs. So, you have nothing to lose. Even if you lose every game, all 3 games remaining, Vancouver and Calgary are not going to – they play 4 times against each other. They're not going to get the points to get in. So, just go with your young guys. Make it a youth movement. And then you have all these guys rested up for the playoffs. And if it doesn't work, you know where they stand for the playoffs.
Yeah. And back a little bit on Kotkaniemi himself. I've been watching every game, even when I don't want to. Some of them are painful to watch, but I've been watching so that I can see how each player reacts. And what I've been seeing out of Kotkaniemi is that he goes down lower to support his defensemen more so than the other centers. He is battling along the boards. He is down low. He is doing a lot of movement. He's skating a lot. So he is tired. By the time the puck leaves the zone, he's already tired.
Yeah.
So entering the zone, and he's still one of the team's top zone entry players into the offensive zone, which tells me that he's got lots of gas. And then once again, in the offensive zone and set up, there's not much left there to play with. So that could have an effect on his offensive output. And if they want to improve that, I've been talking about this for 2 freaking years. Puck moving defenseman. If the puck gets picked up and moved out quicker, there's more energy for the forwards in the offensive zone. Is this an issue for him to work on for his cardiovascular, his VO2? Sure. You can argue that he's getting into better shape cardiovascularly, but he's 20. So he has not peaked yet. So in about 2 more years, you pick up a puck mover. Could it be Norlander? Could it be Harris? They've got guys coming up. They can make a trade for a guy. You add that. You add those 2 years of training to Kotkaniemi, and I guarantee we will see a much more effective hockey player.
You got to look at too. The entire team's not scoring. So why you're picking on the 20-year-old center, I have no idea. The entire team's not scoring.
Because he's not scoring, and he was a third overall pick, so he is a bust, and the team is needs to be rebuilt.
Sure.
And or we could watch the team and be objective and say, look, this is what's wrong. This is what's missing. Can these guys develop those skills? And the answer is yes. The center core can develop all the skills they need. Suzuki and Kotkaniemi are going to be the 1A, 1B for the Canadiens for the next 8, 9, 10 years. Evans plays into this. He's going to be a solid bottom six center. Paling, who was out now with an injury.
Should be a good third line center.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be a good third line center. Size, he's got speed. He can shoot. He can create plays. He's defensively responsible.
He could also move to the wing and become a power forward as well.
Could, but he's a
natural
center.
I don't see that happening.
No.
There's also a tweet out there about Anderson, about how fans are just coming up. I mean, this was part of the Tiger crew, and yeah, his takes are pretty terrible. But anyway.
For those who don't know, the Tiger crew are the Mete lovers who just do everything they can to love Mete and hate on other players.
That's part
of a game. It's their game. That's what they're playing. They're playing a game.
But when it comes back to Kotkaniemi, I don't understand. You know, you want to pick on someone. Jeff Petrie's been having a tear. Well, he's last couple games, he's been pretty good. Like on that winning streak, he was pretty good. But no one said a peep about Jeff Petrie. No one said a peep about Josh Anderson until the other day. He hasn't been doing anything really a lot lately. He's been playing good hockey. He just hasn't been producing points. But the point I'm making is nobody on that team is really producing points. Toffoli and Suzuki are the only, and Petrie and the winning streak are the only players in the last couple weeks that have been producing any type of points for the Montreal Canadiens on a consistent basis.
Yeah. And I look at the players that have been consistent in their style, in their effort. Guys like Toffoli, Suzuki, definitely. Kotkaniemi he's been very steady with his effort level. Anderson has not changed his style whatsoever.
He scores on the rush. And if he can't get the rush, he's not going to score.
Playing scores simple. On the rush, hits rebounds. Yeah. And keep in mind, he's still on pace over a full 82 game season to be a 30 goal scorer this year. So you can complain about him all you want, but guys who score goals like that will score 5 or 6 and then go quiet for a few games and then play a score, go quiet. It's just the way things are. And then you look on defense, Petrie. Yeah. He had about 10 games where he was just
terrible.
He was not Jeff Petrie that that the Canadiens needed. Weber has had a down year as well.
But people have chirped Weber. Weber's been a constant talk.
Yep. Yeah.
About how because, he should be
because he was
put
traded
on...
for PK Subban, and that right there makes him a target.
But the point I'm making is, and I made a tweet about it. I don't understand why the fans need to have that one person that they have to complain about the entire time. They shut up when they play well, but as soon as they have a bad, Price is a prime example. And then they complain that people don't want to play in Montreal. Why don't, because it's not just fans, it's media as well. It's not so we're getting fans. It's the media, media as well. The media every time picks a player that they got to bring down, that they got to, no matter what they do. Did Weber have a great season this year? No. Did he have a terrible season this year? No. Right? Look at the stats. All you analytic guys go on about XGF and XGF percentage. Sherratt and Weber are the 18th best defensive pairing of 200 minutes or more in the NHL, according to XGF percentage. Yet all you guys talk about is what a shitty combination that is. So,
all right. And on that, why don't we transition to playoff lines?
Sure.
The Canadiens are looking at their last few games here before the playoffs. Treg, you've mentioned it. The Canadians have not clinched that last point to clinch a playoff spot, but even if they don't, even if they don't pick up that one point, what are the chances of Calgary and Vancouver winning every single one of their games, winning outright, winning, not just tying, getting a point, winning all their games remaining are low. So let's look at the playoff lines. Matt, obviously I'm going to start with you, but obviously the, once everybody's back and healthy, it's expected everyone is. So let's just assume the entire roster is returned.
Is that with Drouin or not?
I'm going to say leave Drouin out for now.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back.
So come playoffs game one, clearly the Deneau line is going to be fully intact with Tatar and Gallagher.
Yep.
So that's one line. What do you think the other ones are going to be?
I would say your second line, I would say it would probably be Suzuki, Toffoli, and Anderson.
Toffoli and on the left?
Yeah. Yeah, Toffoli on the left with Anderson on the right, yeah.
Treg, what do you think the third line is going to be?
I want to say, what do I think it's going to be or what do I want it to be?
What you think it's going to be?
I think the third line is going to be Kotkaniemi with Lehkonen and Armia.
What about Caulfield?
I want Caulfield on the second or third line. I can see Caulfield with Suzuki, Toffoli, and Anderson bumped down to the third line just for the playoffs. But I have a sneaky feeling that Caulfield might be a fourth line, if not even playing type player when the playoffs start. That's just my feeling with the way Deschamps's been going with the lines. He seems to be going with veterans and defensive-minded players. So that's why I say it's going to be an all-Finnish third line. That's just
bring back the finish line.
That's just Matt, what I think.
Matt, what do you think the fourth line is going to look like?
It's really hard to say. That one really is a kind of a shot in the dark because I wouldn't take out somebody like Corey Perry.
No, he's pretty much guaranteed to be.
So I'd say Perry's a lock for the third or the fourth line, to be honest, depending on where they want to put him. We haven't brought up Byron's name yet, who's somebody that seems to elevate their game when it matters, and especially in the playoffs. So you could see a potential lineup of Byron, Evans / Stahl and Perry for a fourth line. But you know, you're still, I still haven't mentioned Caulfield. Because is he going to be, you know, is he going to be in the lineup? If Drouin comes back, where are you going to put him?
Just to go with you, Matt, I'm pretty much positive the fourth line is going to be Stahl, Byron, Perry.
Could very well be.
Looking at the way Ducharme's run this team, I see Evans and Caulfield as the two guys out unless Montreal drops two games.
Yeah.
Personally.
I could see that.
I don't want it. I would like to see both Evans and Caulfield in.
Yeah.
Because this playoffs, Montreal's nothing to lose.
But like for instance, for Lehkonen, right? You said that you probably see him on the third line, and I could probably see that as well. Lehkonen has elevated his game lately, and he is another guy that elevates his game come the playoffs. Will that line turn into something come playoff time? And will Kotkaniemi find his game by then? Who knows? We can hope.
That's why I asked Blaine, do you want what I think they should, they're going to be, or what I want them to be? Because what I think they're going to be is I think Ducharme is going to put out a defensive minded type lineup. And I don't see Evans and Caulfield on it because he's going to go with the vets. Cause that's what he's been doing so far this season.
I see Ducharme playing matchup. So you have the Matthews line and the Tavares line. There's your top six for the Leafs.
Yeah, so there's your Suzuki line and your Tatar line. Or Suzuki line and your Deneau line.
Yeah, so the Deneau line clearly goes up against Matthews' line because they're the most dangerous. Then Suzuki the Tavares against line, Suzuki matches up with them. And I agree that I think the second line with Suzuki is going to have Toffoli and Anderson because Anderson is a wrecking ball come playoff time. When he played Tampa the couple of years back, they had no response for him whatsoever.
Same with Toronto last year when they played Columbus.
Yeah, he didn't
play. He didn't play. Never mind.
But had he played, I think it would have been the same, because let's be honest, Tampa Bay has a much better team than Toronto overall. Their top six back then had guys like Stamkos. So it's not that different talent-wise, but they had a little bit more grit to their top six than Toronto does. And Anderson just barreled through them all. So I think that that's going to be two good matchups. Now, this is where the Kerfoot line comes into play, and that's where Kotkaniemi's line is going to have to pick up the pace come playoff time. And this is where I think the third line, what I think the third line is going to look like, is you're going to have Kotkaniemi up the middle. You're going to have Armia on his right wing, but I think they're going to put Caulfield on his left, because that's where Drouin would slot in if he were playing. So Caulfield is your Drouin replacement. And that seems to be what's been going on since Drouin went down. They brought in Caulfield. They put Caulfield in similar situations to what Drouin had. Yeah. So that's how I think he's going to do it.
If Drouin comes back, he would be in that spot. He'd be exactly. he would be in the position. He'd be beside Kotkaniemi, but then you'd likely see Armia on that right side, providing the more defensive position,
puck retrieval, cycle game, the puck possession game that he plays, fits in well with those two. Also, Kotkaniemi's playmaking abilities complements Caulfield's play, as Caulfield's a shooter, and Caulfield would be on his off wing, ready for one timers. So it could work. And as I said, it's more because Caulfield is a Drouin replacement, and that's where Drouin would slot in if he were to play. The fourth line is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, and if Drouin does come back, you're knocked. Someone that you would likely see in the lineup is getting knocked out.
Whether
it be Caulfield, Byron, Lekkonen, one of those three guys is out.
It's definitely Caulfield, because Ducharme likes his role guys. He's got roles for each guy. If he's got, he's got a scoring winger, he's going to take a scoring winger out to put a scoring winger in, which, not what I would do, but that's what I've seen him do so far this year. So I'm going to go by what he has done. I'm going to base my decision on this, on what I've seen him do so far this year. he hasn't had a full lineup before, but.
I'm kind of doing the same, only I'm basing it on his go-to veteran guys that he likes to put out there. Yeah. So I see where you're going with that, Blaine, but I'm going with the Lekkonen and the Byron over Caulfield, only because I think he has more trust in the two of them on the defensive side of the game. Not that I think Caulfield's bad defensively, because I don't. I think so far in his NHL game, I think especially now where he's getting used to where he's supposed to be on the ice, his forechecking and backchecking, I think, is pretty good. I just think come playoff time, where it's a tighter, more defensively fought game, he's going to go with his Byrons and his – I would do, but that's what I think. And I totally see where you're coming from and the possibility as well. But I'm just basing it on the old Julian style that I think he's kind of half adopted. And that's where I'm kind of going with.
But at the same time, the Maple Leafs are not come playoff time going to change how they play.
No,
they didn't do it before. They're not going to do it now. No. They've added players to their lineup to give them the things that they were missing in last year's play-ins, because they did not make the playoffs. So they brought in guys. It was postseason, but not playoffs. So they brought in players to give them what they were missing. So Simmons, TJ Brody, give them that little bit of the grit aspect, the playoff format that they were missing. But they're not going to change their style of play. That's why I think Caulfield would still.
Thing is, the rest of their players aren't going to adopt that, though. That's the problem.
No, they're just going to keep playing their way.
Yeah, you've still got you've got Simmons, you've got Foligno, etc. That can play some physical play. But you see, with the Canadians, when they played, was it Pittsburgh last year? It was like every player bought in. It was like everyone was finishing their checks.
And that's how you have to play playoff hockey.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. Yeah.
And this is where Weber's value is going to be felt. his leadership in this. So Price, Weber, these are guys that are nearing the end of their time with the Canadians who still want to win. So they're going to impress upon everybody the need to buy in, the need to get a sacrifice. It worked out pretty well last year, and I think we're going to see a similar thing this year. I'm not saying the Canadians are going to win the series. What I'm saying is it's not a series where Toronto's just show up and then just take it and walk away. This is going to be, it's going to be hard for them to win. You're going to see a 6-7 game series. The Canadians could win this. They possibly could win this. Now the fourth line, back to the lines, that's where things get interesting. For me, the battle on the fourth line, Perry is a guarantee. Guaranteed fourth line winger. He'll be moved up and down based on matchups and play power play time and all that. The decision comes down to Staal and Byron as the other two. Do you put in Lehkonen and Evans, or do you put in Staal and Byron? And I think, Treg, you mentioned it. I agree. He's kind of picked up a little bit on that Julian style. He's going to put Staal and likely Byron to kick it off because of the veteran aspect. And if he notices they don't match up or do well, he's got Lehkonen in the wings. He's got Evans in the wings. Personally, I would use Lehkonen because Lehkonen in the playoffs picks his game up.
I would use Lehkonen and Evans because Evans has the speed to match up with Toronto and Staal does not.
That's right.
Staal looks like an anchor. I'm sorry. I mean, he's played well in the winning streak. That Frolik, Staal, Perry line looked very, very good for what they did and for what they could do and who they were playing against. But come the playoff time, Toronto got fast skaters on almost every line. And Stahl's going to have a hard. It's like you said about tonight. If Staal's matched up against Matthews, Matthews is going to blow by him like crazy. Like, it's not even going to be. It's not even going to be. I mean, Staal. I got to admit, Staal's not the player I thought we were getting. Like, I thought we could get the Staal of the Minnesota, his last year in Minnesota. Instead, we got the Buffalo Staal. So,
he got Buffaloed.
Yeah. But, I agree with you on everything but Caulfield there. And I gave my reasons why, because I feel the little Julian playoff time. I think he's going to go more Julian than he is the other way. And if that doesn't work in the first couple games, then I think you'll see guys like Caulfield and a couple of the younger Evans come into the game, and he's just going to say, what do I have to lose? I might as well play the young guys and see what they can do. What I would like was to see Caulfield in the top six if we can fit him in. I would like them to move the Deneau line back down to the third line, have Kotkaniemi play with Caulfield and Toffoli, and have Suzuki play with Anderson and Caulfield. Or who am I thinking on the left wing? I don't know. I've lost all train of thought for some reason.
It's a matchup thing, though. You don't want to see you wouldn't want to see
the Deneau line would still play against Matthews. They just wouldn't be there. It'd be like what they did in Pittsburgh.
They shut down that one line,
and that's their job, right? Yeah. So you'd have Tatar, Deneau, and Gallagher doing that. You'd have Toffoli, Suzuki, Toffoli, and Anderson, and then Kotkaniemi with Caulfield and Maria. That's how I would do it.
And in a playoff series, if Deneau is capable of shutting Deneau's line is capable of shutting down the Matthews line, you take away the majority of the offense out of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That line with Matthews and Marner, probably going to have Hyman with them as well, I think.
If he's back. Yes.
I think he will be. That line is going to be the majority of their offense. You take that line out, and now you have you got a better chance of outplaying the other three lines.
So, and here's my next thing. What top six of Toronto are you going to get? Are you going to get playoff top six Toronto, which is very inconsistently scoring? And I mean, everyone can go on, but Matthews had a point per game, had 7 points in five games last year, but he scored five of them in one game. So, that's another thing you got to look at. Is this going to be a matter of Montreal? The series is going to come down to whether Toronto's high-end scorers show up or they don't.
That's right.
Right? If they show up, I still think it's going to go at least six games, but Montreal is not going to win the series.
But I think we'll keep all this for our playoff preview episode. Once we know for sure it's the Leafs, I just want to point out that the Leafs are a good team. They are expected to win the division because they won the division the regular season. They're the favorites. Just watch TSN and Sportsnet. It's guaranteed. It's not like, you know, either one of those two media corporations literally own part of the Maple Leafs. They do. But ignoring that, we'll leave it there. And we'll
if it happens that Montreal plays Edmonton in the first round, just wash everything you just listened to.
Yeah, because we're clearly
forget it all.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to change that much if it's Edmonton, because no, you still have the McDavid line you got to match up with. You still have Dreisaitl's line to match up with.
Yeah,
I think the lines would change because I would change to saying Evans and Caulfield will be in, because just to match up with the speed of Edmonton, because Staal and Byron or Lekkonen and whoever they leave out isn't going to match up with that.
I think the difference in the matchups comes down to the defensive lines, which we're going to get to now. Sherratt and Weber are going to be put back together. I know people are going to hate to hear this.
They will.
But that's your playoff shutdown line.
Yep.
Best defensive pair, 18th best defensive pair according to XGF percentage in the NHL right now.
But they're slow. They're both defensive-minded.
I am using these analytic nerds' own stats against them to prove my point.
I honestly don't care come playoff time if Weber and Sherratt are putting the puck in the net. If they can stop it.
And that's what they're there for.
That's what they're
a shutdown pair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, things get a little bit more fun when you get to the second and third pairing. So the Edmondson-Petrie pairing should stay together.
Yes.
Yes.
And they shouldn't have been broken up.
They're an excellent pairing. So there's your top four right there. You got your shutdown pair with Sherratt and Weber. You got your more two-way pair with Edmondson and Petrie. The third pairing is where things start to get very interesting. Do you keep Merrill in and pair him with Romanov, or do you bring Kulak in?
Personally, I want it to be Romanov-Kulak. I think it's going to be Merrill-Romanov.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so as well. I want to see more puck movers in the lineup. You need at least one really good puck mover per pairing. And in the third pair, I don't see the issue with having two really mobile guys, because Romanov still gives you that physical aspect. He can still box out. Kulak is okay in his defensive zone, but both can really move a puck. So I think them on a third pair would be beneficial, as I mentioned earlier in the show, for guys like Kotkaniemi, because now the puck is moving out of the zone quicker and it gives them more time to have the puck in the neutral and offensive zone.
And that's how they were successful the first of the season, because they had the puck moving defenseman act basically bringing the puck into the zone and starting the offense.
That's
right. It wasn't the forwards. And then they got away from that for some reason, and here we are.
Well, Gallagher's the team leader in zone entries into the offensive zone, and that has to do with the transition game. Gallagher's transition game was based on pucks exiting the zone.
It's all because we don't have Victor Mete.
Ugh. Who would get squashed in the playoffs against
the NHL teams. The greatest neutral zone player in the NHL.
It's amazing. So, Matt, what about you? You didn't mention anything about the third pair.
I would say more than likely, I think Romanov's a lock, just the style of play. Especially when it comes to playoffs, he's going to turn up his game. And even if he's not contributing to the offense, he's going to make it really rough for the guys coming over that blue line. It's a coin toss, really, for Merrill or Kulak. But I'd probably go on the more defensive side and go with Merrill as well.
Yeah.
I think that's just what Ducharme's going to go with. I think Kulak-Romanov's the better pair. Because I think Kulak's good enough on the defensive side to be the third line pair. I don't think Merle's really shown, even though he's supposed to be in the games I've watched, I don't think he's shown that he is that much better than Kulak on the defensive side. Even though statistically in Detroit, and then when he first got here, he should be better. But I still think that's who Ducharme's going to go. I think you're going to see Sherratt Weber, Edmondson Petrie, Romanov Merle with Kulak and Gustafson waiting in the wings.
I think Gustafson is only there in case there's injuries.
Yep. Yep. Or if they're down and they haven't been scoring and they need that guy to.
Even if somebody does go out with injury, I put Kulak in over Gustafson.
Oh, he'll be in exactly. Before Gustafson. I mean, if Gustafson was just a little better defensively, he'd probably be an all-star freaking defenseman, but he's just terrible.
He's just there to be the new Mete.
He's
that should be a hashtag.
Wow, well, he's a little hashtag bit better. He's a little bit better than Mete. Sorry, Tiger team. But Gustafson's only better than Mete because he actually creates offense.
And we know they listen because they stole Habs Unfiltered's meme, Tiger 27 meme. Yeah.
So I'm just telling you.
Not steal. It's yours. Keep it.
Gustafson is only better than Mete because he actually creates offense.
He has scored points.
Yeah.
Although Mete's time in Ottawa has been much more productive than in Montreal because it took him 127 games to score in Montreal, but only 8 to score in Ottawa.
That's right.
Development.
Yeah. And everyone knew he'd become a top 4 defenseman in Ottawa, and he did it when 2 of their top 4 defensemen got injured.
That's right.
Not before. He was still raking in the 11 minutes a game. So that's 4 NHL coaches who don't think he's a top 4 defenseman.
Yeah. So, all right. I think we've pretty much covered everything we were going to cover today. Was there
about any goaltending?
No, let's not.
Okay.
Let's not go there.
Playoff goaltending. It's obviously
it's
Allen.
Price.
Price is healthy. Price is playing. We know that.
We all know that's what's going to happen. All right. So I think that does it for this week. Any last thoughts for either of you?
I hope.
Don't forget to use our unfiltered 20 code when you buy something from East Coast Lifestyle.
Yeah, that's a good point. Keep an eye on the Habs Unfiltered accounts on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, because that code changes. East Coast Lifestyle likes to change the code so they can see if anyone's paying attention. So you get about 5 to 10 chances to use a specific code, and then they will regenerate a new code for us. Our partners at East Coast Lifestyle have been nice enough to help us out with that, and we will provide you new codes when the old ones are used up. So keep an eye on our social media. That way you can keep saving 20% off any purchase from East Coast Lifestyle. Some of the best lifestyle brands out there based right here in Halifax.
Made in somebody's basement.
Literally.
Literally, yep.
Yep. I've also seen the still where they make their new East Coast Lifestyle booze. And I know what flavor's coming out next.
But I can't give you a special code if you want that.
Yeah. 20. So there's the East Coast Lifestyle. Keep an eye out for that for your 20% off there. Remember to go to No Name Hockey. And you can buy your equipment there. They provide excellent prices. They're one of our original and longest serving partners. If anyone's seen lately, I got a brand new stick that's being sent out to me. It's a customized stick. No Name posted that on their Instagram account in their stories. My Big Papa Pump stick is on its way, so I cannot wait.
You're not Scott Steiner.
Yeah. 90s wrestlers, baby. Hey, I like to wrestle for position in front of the net.
You don't have to when Buzzy's in net to shoot the puck.
Well, that's part of the reason why they call me Big Papa Pump, because I just pump goals in. Close my eyes and
not
shoot on net.
Not it's touching Pudsy. That.
Yeah, it's Pudsy. You just close your eyes and shoot. You'll score. Just ask him. He agrees. All right. So I think we've done enough goofing off. That does it for the show. I want to thank everyone for listening, for tuning in, checking us out on all the podcast platforms, including iHeartRadio. We are now members of iHeartRadio. Took a while to get there, but we got there. We are also on the Hockey Writers podcast network. Check that out. There's a lot of great podcasts on the Hockey Writers. There's some new ones. Chicks with Sticks just came out. It's a new podcast. It's women in hockey. Check them out. Our friend Mel Boyd, she's on that panel. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, hit like, hit that bell. Don't miss any episodes. We have exclusive content in there as well. And again, you guys make this fun. You make this happen. So the more of you that come out and listen and watch, the better, because then we can all chirp Treg.
I got big shoulders. I can take it.
He's working on them. He's trying to build them up. Someday he'll be a big boy. So again, thanks for listening. And remember, if you are talking about it, so are we.
Are you in the market for quality sticks and equipment you can afford? There is a no-frills, no-nonsense company that wants to provide that to you. No Name Hockey. No Name Hockey is a small Canadian company started by former pro player Jason Goulet. When he retired, he searched for sticks that felt like when he was a pro, but could never find the right one, or one that was reasonably priced. So he decided to start No Name Hockey. Now No Name offers high-quality, customized sticks at a fair price. They won't try to wow you with a fancy name. They will focus on providing you a pro-stock quality stick that you can afford. The cost of sticks has gone through the roof due to sponsorships and licensing fees. No Name Hockey makes sticks for the No Names and players currently making a name.
And I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.